ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Śrīmad-Bhāgavatam, 2nd Canto, Chapter 10, Bhāgavatam is the answer to all questions, text 25. Gatim Jagīśita Kāro Ruruhāte Abhikāmikām Padbhyām Yagya Swayam Avyam Dharmabhi Kriyate Nibhi Gatin Jigishita Pada Ruruhate Bekamikam Padhyam Yagya Swayam Avyam Dharmabhi Kriyate Nibhi Gatim Jagishita Pada Ruruhate Bikamikam Padhyam Yagya Swayam Havyam Karma Bikriyate Nibhi Gatim Jagishita Pada Ruruhate Bikamikam Padhyam Yagya Swayam Avyam Karma Bhi Kriyate Nibhi Purport by Swangresha Prabhupada. Every human being is engaged in his particular occupational duty, and such activities are visible as men go hither and thither. This is very prominently visible in big cities of the world. People are going all over the cities with great concern from one place to another. This movement is not limited only to the cities, but is also visible outside the cities from one place to another or from one city to another by different means of vehicles. Men are moving by cars and rails on the roads, by subways within the earth, and by planes in the sky, for the purpose of business success. But in all these movements, the real purpose is to earn wealth for comfortable life. For this comfortable life, the scientist is engaged, the artist is engaged, the engineer is engaged, the technician is engaged, all in different branches of human activity. But they do not know how to make the activities purposeful to fulfill the mission of human life. Because they do not know this secret, all their activities are targeted towards the goal of sense gratification without control. And therefore, by all this business, they are unknowingly entering into the deep regions of darkness. Because they have been captivated by the external energy of the Supreme Lord, they have completely forgotten the Supreme Lord Vishnu. And thus they have taken it for granted that this life, as presently manifested under the conditions of material nature, is all in all for enjoying the highest amount of sense gratification. But such a wrong conception of life cannot give anyone the desired peace of mind. And thus, in spite of all advancement in knowledge by use of the resources of nature, no one is happy in this material civilization. The secret is that at every step, they should try to execute sacrifices toward the path of world peace. The Bhagavad Gita, 18:45-46, also advises the same secret in the following verses. Sve sve karmanya vidata sam siddhim labhate nara sakarma nidata siddhim yatha vindati tatstrinu yatha pravitya bhutanam yena sagam idam jatam Sakarmana tamabhyarchya siddhim vindati manava. The Lord said to Arjuna, just hear from me how one can attain the highest perfection in life simply by discharging his specified occupational duty. Men can attain the highest perfection of life by worshiping the Supreme Lord and by performing sacrifice for the sake of the Supreme Lord Vishnu, who is all-pervading and by whose control every living being acquires his desired facilities according to his personal propensity. There's no harm in having different propensities in life, because every human being is proportionately independent to chalk out the plan of his life by different occupations. But one should make it a point in his life to know perfectly well that he is not independent absolutely. One is certainly under the control of the Supreme Lord and under different agencies. Knowing this, one should make it a point that by his work and the result of his labor, he serves the Supreme Lord as prescribed by the authorities expert in the transcendental loving service of the Supreme Lord Vishnu. For performing such occupational duties of life, the leg is the most important instrument of the body, because without the help of the legs, one cannot move from one place to another, and therefore the Lord has special control over the legs of all human beings, which are meant for performing yajñas. Om Gyanati Nandasya Gyanam Jana Salabhaya Chakshun Militamya Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. In this chapter, Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. We're understanding that the absolute truth, supreme cause of all causes, is sentient, fully conscious. Consciousness means desires. Desire is the most tricky thing to deal with in our existence. And when you understand what desire is all about, then you can deeply appreciate the wonder of Krishna consciousness. Every living entity has desire, no matter how subtle. Desire is compared to be like the fragrance of a flower. You can't see it. You don't see the fragrance, but it's there. Our desires cause things to happen. We have desires as part and parcel of living entities. And Krishna certainly has desires. In fact, without Krishna's desire as the supreme sentient being, nothing happens. You can furthermore analyze how when we try to fulfill our desires, there are problems. When Krishna fulfills his desires, there are never any problems. The Lord is infallible in desire and the fulfillment of desire. Whereas, when we are living separate from Krishna, we have problems every time we desire. Now, this takes some humility to understand, because we really, unconsciously, will rebel against this point. To think that I have desires which cannot be fulfilled, it can be very depressing. If you look at it in that way, which is the true way, my material desires will not be fulfilled. I'm carrying around with me these desires, which are simply going to lead to problems. This takes great humility to accept. And when you look at the matter straight ahead, you'll see that material existence is driven by pride. Our pride is that because I have desires, therefore it'll be all right. Because they're my desires. And after all, I am a nice person as far as I can see. And what's wrong with a nice person like me having some desires? Therefore, I know that not all my desires will be fulfilled, but at the same time, I feel quite confident, knowing me, knowing myself, that quite a few of my desires will be fulfilled. I'm looking forward to that. That is the basis of material existence. Some of my desires will be fulfilled. Now, what does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? For those whose desires are not perfectly dovetailed with the Supreme Lord, Krishna says, Mogasha, moga karmana, moga jnana vichetasa. All your hopes will be defeated. All your activities will be baffled. All your attempts at knowledge will be frustrated. Because you've taken shelter of the material energy, that will be the result. Regardless of how nice we think our desires are. This is the truth of material existence. Now, what are we going to do about desire if indeed our material desires are simply going to frustrate us? Shall we try to kill ourselves? Or shall we just blind ourselves to this fact of existence and plunge into sense gratification anyway? No. Here you can see the wonder of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness focuses right on this problematic, paradoxical thing known as desire and uses it so that we can achieve the highest perfection. So, in bhakti yoga, we don't annihilate desire. We learn how to desire perfectly. This is the wonder of bhakti. How to desire what Krishna wants. Then, desire becomes an unlimitedly splendorous world of spirituality. But when desires are not aimed at Krishna, when desires are not aligned with Krishna's desires, then our desires will simply cause us problems. And this is a very, very difficult point to understand sometimes. And we can watch ourselves, look in our hearts, and see how we rebel against this point. Why do we rebel? Because they're my desires. And what's wrong with me having some desires? You can catch yourself doing it like that. Why can't I have some desires? What do you think I am anyway, a piece of stone? You can see that. Causing rough points in devotional service, in our devotional careers sometimes. Look, enough for Krishna. It's time for me. I mean, Krishna, yeah, he understands it's about time I had some things for me. You ought to understand it anyway. This is desire manifesting. And to hear that such desires, which are independent of Krishna, will lead to frustration, that's too humiliating many times for us to accept. Because after all, they're our desires. What's wrong with me having some desires? And then we look at the possibility of separating ourselves from our independent desires, and we get frightened. This is our influence of Nirvishesh Shunyavada, impersonalism, voidism. If I somehow indeed would one day separate myself from material desires, what would I be left with? I might just disappear. This is a fear that runs underneath our conditioned tendencies. First of all, we have that surliness, that rebelliousness. Look, these are my desires. What's wrong with me having a few desires? It's my business. Yeah, I know it probably will lead to frustration, but I'll work it out my own way. It may not be Krishna conscious now, but it could be in the future. I remember that line. One of my godmothers told me that 1977 in New Dorka. He wanted something which he shouldn't have wanted. And so I was preaching to him, and he was one of the most famous kirtan leaders of New Dorka's history. And so I was preaching to him, another of his godbrothers was preaching to him, and he came up with that line. Look, all right, you know, this situation I've gotten myself in and what I'm going for, what I want, may not be Krishna conscious now, but it could be in the future. So bugger off and don't try to preach to me too much. So this is all part of the surly, rebellious program that I've got to be me. It gets a bit new agey. There's nothing new about the new age. It's the same old thing that leads to birth, death, disease, and old age. Me and my desires, just let me alone and let me act on them. Otherwise, what do you want me to do? We present the situation starkly to ourselves. If I don't deal with these desires that are mine, what am I supposed to do? How do I define my identity? How do I express myself? Come on, get real. This is the battle we're facing every day in our Krishna consciousness. Whose desires are going to fill my life? Sometimes we try to work out a deal with Krishna. Okay, a little bit for your desires, a lot for my desires. And gradually in the future, I promise, I'll cut down on my share and increase your share. I promise, in the future. If you'll just let me get what I want now. We get really bold, you know, boldacious, as I say, you know. Just look, you know, I'm simply, it's just me and my desires. Is there something wrong with that? This gets to be our attitude. Now, when we look at Krishna, we find a personality who has no problem whatsoever with desires. And Krishna has unlimited desires. This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Unlimited desires with the unlimited ability to satisfy his desires. Now look at our situation. Tiny living entities. Kejaga, Satavagasha, Sadamsa, Sadrishatmaga. Comparable to what? 1,000 to 1,010,000, typically.
10,000.
Yes, just to give you some idea. So, that's how tiny we are. So we actually don't have the ability to desire so much in comparison to Krishna. But even when it comes to our puny ability to desire, we run into complete problems. Except when we desire what Krishna wants. When we desire what Krishna wants, we're entering into the realm of unlimited spiritual possibilities, where everything works out perfectly for Krishna's pleasure and the pleasure of Krishna's devotees. That is Vrindavan. Goloka Vrindavan is the magical land of desire, where everything is someone who gives pleasure to Krishna. We've often explained, there's no matter in Goloka Vrindavan. Everything is a person related to Krishna. So much so that when Krishna walks through the forest of Vrindavan, the Jamuna River tries to flow towards his lotus feet. The branches of trees overladen with fruit, they bend down to offer the fruit at Krishna's feet. The bumblebees are always buzzing around Krishna. This is Vrindavan. Everyone is desiring 100% Krishna's pleasure. And of course, Lord Chaitanya has certified, Ramya Kashchit Upasana Raja Vadu Vaganya Kalpita. There's no better way to see the process of desire in perfection than by looking at the cowherd damsels of Vrindavan. Raja Vadu in that verse refers not only to the young gopis, but also the older gopis who take care of Krishna with maternal feelings. So whether the older gopis, and especially the younger gopis in Madhurya Ras, there is no better way demonstrated how to use desire for loving Krishna. Therefore, you'll find so many elevated verses in Chaitanya Charitamrita, which explain how the gopis apparently are acting only for their self-interest, but actually they know nothing except Krishna's interest. So much so that even when they dress and comb their hair, they're 100% doing it to give Krishna pleasure. Even when they're angry at Krishna, the Shastra describes they're right-wing gopis, left-wing gopis. In other words, some gopis are known to be very passive and agreeable with Krishna for his pleasure. Other gopis are known to get cross with Krishna and to reprimand him. But all that is going on, all these varieties are there simply to give Krishna pleasure. That is the spiritual world, the place where desire flows 100% smoothly for perfection in unlimited types of circumstances. There, the living entity with its limited ability to desire can experience unlimited happiness in association with the supreme desiring entity, Krishna. Krishna has unlimited desires, and he has the unlimited ability to satisfy his unlimited desires. That is the story of Krishna Leela, Ram Leela, all Leelas. The Lord can satisfy any desire in any way. He cannot be limited when it comes to desire. So this is a very humbling point. This establishes Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He can do what we cannot. We desire, okay, you're free to desire, but all you get is frustration. Mogasha, mogadhanana, mogajanata jetasa. Krishna desires, and he doesn't even have to work or endeavor to fulfill his desires. As soon as Krishna wants something, it happens. No struggle. Now, as soon as we desire, as soon as we want something, watch and see what happens. It never comes easy. There's always a struggle. This is another difficult point to see sometimes because of our pride in ourselves and our relationship with the world of Maya. How? Everything we're doing is a struggle. Even the very things we think we like to do, they're actually a struggle when you think about it. I've had experience explaining this point to people, and sometimes they find it very difficult. What do you mean? Everything about my material life is a struggle? No, there are things I enjoy doing. But just analyze the things you enjoy doing, and you'll see that you have to struggle. You see, because people are overwhelmed by desire, they think there's no struggle. No, not at all. It may be that you're trying to fulfill your desires, but still it's a struggle to do that. I was explaining to some ladies in the audience, when you get up, just when you pick up a comb and try to comb your hair, that's a struggle, don't you see that? But you're thinking, it's my hair, and by combing it, it's going to bring me good results. That makes you overlook the fact that it's a struggle. Why do you have to get up and comb your hair? Suppose you didn't. Yeah, well, if we didn't, then hair wouldn't look very nice. Yes, that means nature is forcing something on you that you don't want, and therefore to go the other way to counteract it, you have to struggle. Can't you see that? Don't comb your hair when you get up in the morning. See what happens. No, we can't do that because we want to look a certain way. And why do you want to look a certain way? Well, to get certain results. Isn't that a struggle? You have to endeavor in this world to try and get what you want. Rarely will you get what you want. But even if you do, you'll still be frustrated. These are the things we are very hesitant to look at straight in the eye. These are the volatile, explosive truths of the Bhagavad Gita. And when you start to deal with these kind of truths, your whole material existence, your material desires can just blow apart. This is the kind of information Prabhupada has in his purports. That's why he uses such special, well-thought-out concepts, many of them coming from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Concepts like captivated by the external energy. These are things you should think about. What does it mean to be captivated by the external energy? Caught in the clutches of Maya. These are very precise philosophical gems, scientific jewels. And you're meant to think about these things, not just breeze through the pages, but no, Prabhupada's purports are teaching you how to think and how to see the world around you. And they're very humbling to have to admit that what I think is my own pleasure pursuit is actually a struggle. When you're going on a vacation, those who do the airport or travel through the airport, those who distribute books at the airport, you see it all the time. People are going on vacation and they're happy, but they don't see they're struggling. They have to struggle through the airport, struggle up to the check-in counter with their bags, look for their documents. Where's my passport? Where's my ticket? Do you have an aisle seat for me? This is struggle, but they don't see it that way because it's my vacation. Ahamkara vimudatma. You see, that's how it works. Ahamkara vimudatma. Because I'm a bewildered fool and think I'm doing something for me, and it's all up to me, therefore I don't understand karpate kriyamanani. I don't understand that I'm simply caught up in the process of material nature. This is what's happening. I'm part of a process, And I'm being literally ground under by this process, ground up by the wheel of time. The Buddhists, they have a nice expression. Buddha taught a very limited gospel about how Maya works, but of course Buddha didn't teach anything about spiritual perfection. Still, he had a particular narrow task to do on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the Buddhists, they have a nice expression that when you desire in this world and try to act on it, you're actually pushing on the wheel of repeated birth and death. You know, just like at fairs and carnivals like that, they have this wheel that you push on, and according to where it winds up, you may win a prize or something like that. Quiz shows on television, they may have that kind of thing. Life is like that, the wheel of samsara. We never think that my desires and activities are pushing on the wheel of samsara, making it go round. No, we just think, it's me, just expressing myself. It's me, just trying to do a few things to be happy. That's all that's going on. But to actually think, here I go again, pushing on the wheel of repeated birth and death. That's actually the truth. But we don't want to think like that, because we're afraid, if I get rid of all my material desires, I'll disappear. Look, I got to have some rights. There's got to be some room for me in Krishna consciousness. And room for me means my desires. Actually, there is room in Krishna consciousness for the gradual diminishment of material desires. How is that done? By putting yourself into devotional service, dovetailing your desires in such a way that Krishna will refine your desires for you. You may desire a certain thing. So what do? I'll engage those desires in an authorized process for connecting those desires to Krishna. And because you're doing that, the Lord reciprocates and makes it so that your present material desires won't lead to more material desires. You see, that is the deadly thing. We are so silly, we think, okay, I have a material desire. If I just fulfill it, that'll be the end of it. No way. It doesn't work like that. One desire leads to many branched other desires. This is the trap. So here we are, endowing ourselves with innocence and sincerity, endowing ourselves with good motives. I know I'm not perfect, but, you know, there's just a few things I desire, and you know, I should just be allowed to desire these things and fulfill them, and that'll be the end of it. No, it's not the end of it. Each desire, when you act on it and try to fulfill it, leads to many branches of other desires. And in this way, you push on the wheel of repeated birth and death, and your material existence goes on into the next life and into another life. Actually, we're so helpless, we don't remember all our desires from our previous life, so the super soul has to remind us. Now, we have an authorized program how to deal with desire. It's not that we say, look, you either 100% desire what Krishna wants or get out of it. No, we don't say that. We say, okay, we have some infection, we have some desires. Now, let's take Krishna's instructions and apply those desires in a way that Krishna can treat them. In that way, we may even act on those desires, but we act on them according to Krishna's therapeutic program, and therefore, in spite of having those desires, they don't lead to further desires. You see, we want to at least deal with the desires we have without them causing other desires in the future. That requires a therapeutic program for doing that. Vedic culture is the complete system how to deal with desire in such a way that one desire doesn't lead to another. Dovetail the desires with Krishna's desires. That means you have to follow a particular program and process. Desire is no problem for Krishna. Actually, our desires are no problem for Krishna. Krishna is the master at desire. Only because the Lord desires sense activity do we have senses. That's the point of all these verses in the chapter. Thereupon, Because of his desiring to control movement, his legs became manifested. Universal Form's legs became manifested. And therefore we have legs which can move us places in response to our desires. Because the source of everything, the supreme cause of all causes, has desire, only then do we have senses and can desire. Krishna desires, and he has senses to fulfill those desires. Therefore, we, the part and parcel of living entities, have desires and senses. Once we understand that desire and sense activity comes directly from Krishna, then we'll be more likely to take into account the Lord's desires for how to use our senses. And that is the whole mystique of Krishna consciousness. The most troublesome thing, desire, can be the gateway to perfection very easily if we do it Krishna's way. Doing it Krishna's way means following Krishna's process. So a devotee has to constantly ask himself or herself, am I cooking with fire or am I cooking with smoke? Cooking with smoke won't get the job done. It'll be a very frustrating affair. What value does smoke have? It lets you know that somehow or other, something is a bit of fire. So you don't discount the smoke completely. But at the same time, it won't effectively get the cooking job done. You can try it in the kitchen, just to cook with smoke. In order for the smoke to be there has to be a little flame somewhere. Still, you cannot cook the preparation with smoke. Similarly, in Krishna consciousness, smoke won't get the job done. We have to cook with fire. That means we have to carefully follow the process of bhakti yoga and we'll get the result. Otherwise, our Krishna consciousness will be a frustrating affair, a problematic affair. All we have to do is look at, am I following the process properly or not? Srila Prabhupada had such faith in the process he gave us. Even for coming to Radhanuga Bhakti, he wrote in 1972, coming to Radhanuga Bhakti, that is not an easy thing, but if you follow the program I've given you, going to the classes, attending Mangalarti, chanting Hare Krishna, following the regular principles, it will come. Haven't I told you these things in Nectar of Devotion? In other words, why don't you read it? I've given you everything. We have the process, but what is needed now is we have to ask ourselves, what am I going to cook with, fire or smoke? If you follow the bhakti process a certain way, desire will be taken care of majestically. And if we don't follow the process of bhakti properly, desire will cause us so many problems. Okay. Time for one question? Yes, comment.
Sometimes you speak to devotees and they say that, you know, of course, you don't have desire. You understand that so often it is desire, it's frustration, Krishna, you know, desires, you know, surrender everything. But then some devotees, they say that sometimes it's not challenging. There's not a challenge here. You know, I can't use my brain totally. Or I can't use my ability. Sometimes people come in here, they have abilities in the real world. They become Krishna consciousness. You know, my ability isn't being totally challenged, neither is my brain. But it's like just cooking or just food, you know, just whatever, working in the restaurant, you know, working in a gift shop. It's not a challenge. This is like, well, what is this? You know, I've got a lot to offer. I've got a lot to give. Maybe I'm going to be a star or something. And the Krishna consciousness is just being dampened, being through water. So what do you say to that?
Often what happens is that we don't see the extraordinary opportunities Krishna is giving us to develop in devotional service. Sometimes it is true that people are not being properly engaged or stimulated in Krishna consciousness, but For example, here at New Dwarka, it's quite obvious that if anybody wants to serve Krishna, there'll be such nice organization and management to allow that. So, if you're at a place in which things are nicely organized and managed, so that you can have facility to go back to Godhead, then you have to look and see. Maybe I'm not understanding the great jewels that are in my hands. It is a challenge to see that I already have everything I need. And the fact is, if you follow the process of devotional service that Prabhupada gave, you'll see that sooner or later your desires to serve Krishna in a certain way, they'll be facilitated. You'll see that each and every time, and that'll give you faith in Krishna. But you have to do it Krishna's way. And often, doing things Krishna's way means that sometimes, for the sake of Krishna's pleasure, you have to do services that you never thought you would do. But if you just do that, for sure, you'll find out sometime along the way that Krishna gives you more opportunity to do what you thought you wanted than you could ever have thought of. More than you thought. Krishna, he is the most expert at reciprocating with his devotees. We doubt that. So, yes, not here, but other places, there can be some problem in that no one is seeking how to constructively engage devotees. But still, even in such places, if you go on dedicated to the process of devotional service, you'll find out that Krishna will look out for you. If you look out for Krishna, he'll look out for you better than you could ever conceive. That was Sudama Vipra's conviction when he left Krishna's palace in Dwarka. Remember Sudama Vipra so poor that his wife had to beg to get a handful of low-grade rice to give to the Lord as a gift? He didn't want to go to Krishna to beg for wealth, but his wife was on his case. Look, you know, we're so poor, Krishna's your friend. Come on, go see him, he'll do something about our situation. Sudama Vipra took it simply as an opportunity to see the Lord. He didn't want the wealth. When he met the Lord at Dwarka, you know how the Lord treated him, sitting him on his own bed, or was it Rukmini's bed, and massaging his feet, and such a wonderful treatment he got. And then when Sudama Vipra left, apparently he had nothing. The Lord had given him nothing. So what was Sudama Vipra thinking? How intelligent the Lord is. He didn't give me a penny because he knew if he gives me a tiny bit of wealth, I'll fall down. That's how great he is. He knows his devotees. He refuses to give his devotees things that will cause them problems. That was Sudama Vipra's understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So similarly, we have to give a bit of credit to Krishna in that he knows how to take care of us. And sometimes there will be tough moments. Sometimes there will be some trials in trying to serve Krishna. There are no trials in the material world. There are no difficulty in working in the material world, but the appreciative materialist who recognize all your abilities and have fair equitable dealings at the workplace. No problems in that. So, therefore, out of love for Krishna, we tolerate some inconveniences living with the association of devotees. Prabhupada would say it like that. Sometimes there are inconveniences living with devotees, but there's so much more benefit that is available to us. So, our challenge mainly is, how am I going to come and see the deities every day? How am I going to water Tulsi Devi every day? How am I going to read Prabhupada's books? How am I going to engage my legs in walking across the street to the temple? What about that challenge? How am I going to chant the holy name with attention? What about that challenge? This is all part of the process of cooking with fire and not smoke. So let's first appreciate the main challenges, and then Krishna will empower us to do other things. But without understanding the challenge of how to cook with fire instead of smoke, will not be effective in Krishna's service. I think we have our injunction here at 8:15 a.m. So, all glories to the Prabhupada. Krishna.